Back together again, you and I chatting it up midweek Wednesday style, July 23rd, 2025, right here on Connecticut Today. We chatted as usual on a Wednesday with Hearst Connecticut Media senior editor and columnist Dan Haar about another progressive push against a possible third term by Governor Ned Lamont, the latest economic and state housing numbers, and more possible challenges to a senior member of the state's congressional delegation. We also welcomed back to the program Adam Kissel, author of Slacking, A Guide to Ivy League Miseducation, to talk about the latest battles involving Columbia and Harvard universities and, of course, the Trump White House.
All right, let us push ourselves away from the Epstein Files buffet, and let's talk about all things Connecticut once again, including some economic numbers, maybe a surprising push in a different congressional district, and all that. Every week at this time, this break in the 5 o'clock hour, Dan Haar, Hearst Connecticut Media senior editor and columnist. Mr. Haar, good afternoon, sir. How are you?
Good afternoon. We also have the poll on Lamont, but we can get to that maybe or maybe not.
Well, let's start with that. This kind of a push poll, Dan Haar, and I explained to my listeners early on how these push polls work, and you try to fashion questions to elicit an emotional response. But nonetheless, Dan, yet another move by the governor's party that, if not looking to get him out of the race, looking to push him left, correct?
Yes. The first thing I have to say is that the folks who produce this poll take great umbrage at those who characterize it as a push poll, because technically speaking, a push poll is a poll that's designed not to get polling information and data, but to actually push voters in a direction.
Uh-huh.
This is not that. I would call this a nudge poll. That is, you're basically saying to the voters, the first question is, do you think Ned Lamont should run for a third term or something to that effect? And I did get the poll, but I don't have it right in front of me.
Yeah.
But it's and the answer to that question was 63% said yes.
Yeah.
And then they said, well, we're going to read you a statement. And they read the statement. And the statement basically says that, you know, the Governor Ned Lamont has failed to live up to this, that, and the other thing, has refused to tax the rich, and has vetoed. The most important point is they said he vetoed a housing bill that would have created 100,000 units of housing. And while that bill aimed to create 100,000 units of housing as a target, it isn't quite safe. So after asking that question and after saying that, the answer, it dropped to 36% of people, or 33 or something, that said that he should. And these are likely Democratic voters. So I do agree that what it points to is the idea that if a viable opponent were to point these things out, that viable opponent would be all the more viable. It does point to his, the way I put it is it shows that Lamont's support is broad but not deep among Democrats.
And so off of that, Dan, I asked listeners here, and we put it on Facebook, we took calls on it here. So is that enough, you think, to get Ned Lamont? I guess he has a meeting coming up tonight with some legislators. Is he apt to say even after that, hey, this is who I am? Like, I may go for a third term here. Or does he say, well, all right, maybe I better soften up here? Does he care?
Remember, as we've discussed, the left is not necessarily the left. My understanding is that he's meeting with some urban legislators tonight. I don't have that nailed down, but I understand that. Right. So if that's the case, remember, it's not the urban legislators that were pushing, not necessarily the urban legislators that were pushing for the housing reform. Mm-hmm. And it's not the urban legislators that were pushing for the strike pay. And those are the big things that the left is so pissed off about. So you have your left, there's five lefts, right? And so Governor Lamont is perfectly adept at doing what he needs to do to stay in the good graces of certain people in the left. I just had one of my neighbors here in West Hartford is in the construction business, and he was really, really wound up over that his company can't his company can't bid on a job because it's a union-only contract.
Well, there
and
you
it's
go.
It's a state job.
Yeah.
So he's saying that liberal Lamont is kowtowing to the unions. So, and here it is, a union-backed poll that says Lamont is the devil. So it's a complicated picture.
Before we go to another interesting electoral, perhaps, development, let's talk about the economy, jobs, housing, all that. Dan, I know that's right up your alley, so... Some new numbers out there. What do they show? What do you think?
Flat is the new up. We'll take flat. And let's talk about jobs and housing. In jobs, Connecticut is not keeping pace with the nation. But then again, Connecticut has never kept pace with the nation, and it more or less shouldn't keep pace with the nation because we don't want to live like that. We don't want this to look like New Jersey. Like, I grew up in northern New Jersey. If I wanted this to be northern New Jersey, I'd move back.
Okay.
Like, we don't want this, frankly.
Right.
We don't want this to look like lower Fairfield County. It's too dense. Most of the state is a slower growing state. So I wouldn't worry too much about the flat jobs growth. You want to see more than we have.
Mm-hmm.
Right now we're 7,500 year over year. I think it's about a half a percent. You want to be at about a percent. If you're not at a percent, you're really at an unhealthy level. But you don't need to be at the nation's 2% growth level. Right? And, of course, that has slowed under Trump.
Yeah.
So Connecticut is failing to keep pace with a slower level of growth in the nation. So that's the job picture.
Yeah.
And, of course, we care about the quality of jobs,
yeah.
And the quality of jobs is mixed. Manufacturing jobs are declining, and that's not good. You don't want to see that.
Yeah, yeah. I was going to ask you.
Housing.
I was going to ask you about the mix, but you covered it. Okay, what do we have for housing now?
Housing, on the other hand, is better than the nation. Where our prices are up year over year, according to my colleague Alex Soul, who's quoting from Berkshire Hathaway data.
Mm-hmm.
Our prices, our median sale price year over year is up, and as you know, some markets are showing down.
Yeah.
I'm just looking at the numbers now on jobs. Manufacturing year over year is down 3,200. You don't want to see that.
No.
That's not what you want to see. And finance is probably up a little bit. Finance is up 900. Yeah.
Okay.
So it's, you know, that's better than down. But the bulk of the jobs are in education and health. And some of those jobs do and some do not pay well. But generally, you want to see professional services do well. And right now that's moderately up and finance is moderately up and manufacturing is down. Anyway, getting to the housing market.
Yeah.
We are seeing more houses on the market, although not nearly the number that we were seeing before the pandemic. Right. The bottom line is nothing's happening with housing in Connecticut or anywhere else until those interest rates come down.
Yeah.
And right now the president is fighting with the Fed chairman, as you know.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure whether he hates Elon Musk or Jerome Powell, the Fed chairman, more. But right now, it's unlikely. I'm not going to sell my house if I've got a 2.75% mortgage and I'm looking at 6.7% mortgage rates. That's not happening.
No.
So it's going to stay slow. But the key thing is that prices are holding up in Connecticut.
Okay.
And that's good for homeowners and bad for buyers.
All right. Finally, interesting electoral politics in the greater Hartford area. John Larson, longtime influential Connecticut political family. He's been the first district man in Congress for about 30 or so years. A few weeks ago, he looked like he was sailing. Now you have a blue-collar contractor. You have rumored to be somebody from the Hartford School Board, an accomplished attorney. Luke Bronin making some rumbling. Jillian Gilchrist. All of a sudden, Dan Haar, in the space of about, I don't know, a week, week and a half, the political walls here seem to be tightening a little bit on John Larson and the first. What do you make of this?
Yeah, the general way of thinking around here in West Hartford, is that if John Larson wants to stay in the fight, he's going to win.
Yeah.
Right? Because he, by the way, he's not only his own legacy, but he was anointed by the Baileys, right?
Oh, yeah.
And Pinellis.
Yeah.
So he's really the heir to the legacy that goes back to the 50s, right?
Wow.
And so, yes, he is the establishment candidate. And a lot of people wish he would step aside, especially after he had two medical issues, and especially since it's unlikely that his Social Security proposal is going to get anywhere, even in the next Congress.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly not while Trump is president will it be signed. So since he's looking at 6 years to get that through, he ain't lasting 6 years. He may last two. The argument is, please step aside. Luke Bronin, the former two-term mayor of Hartford,
yeah,
he's not zealously going about this in a public way. Yeah. He hasn't filed. He has told people that he's, you know, looking to run. He did confront. He met with John Larson.
Larson thought he was joking, right?
That's exactly right, yeah. But and that's what our friend Mark Pasniokas reported.
Yeah.
But Luke Bronin, notably, Luke Bronin isn't talking to any of us. I haven't. Oh. I've been trying to get him on the phone for 2 days. He's not calling me,
yeah.
Right? And so he obviously doesn't want a story out that says I'm in or I'm out. He's still what that tells you is that he's still, you know, testing the waters and all that. And, of course, as Kevin Rennie reported it correctly, I agree with Kevin, that this indicates that Luke Bronin is thinking that he's less likely to win for governor. There is a path for him to win for governor, but it's a narrow path.
Yeah.
And he may think that the path is clearer in Congress.
Ah, the intrigue. Sounds like a Netflix multi-part series. Dan Haar, Hearst Connecticut Media senior editor and columnist. Check out his stuff online. Dan, thank you. Be good, and we'll chat next week. Thank you, sir.
We will chat next week.
All right. Thank you, Dan. Dan Haar, Hearst Connecticut Media. Return visit from this gentleman. He was on with us a few weeks ago. Adam Kissel, visiting fellow for higher ed and reform at the Center for Education Policy, the Heritage Foundation, board member of the University of West Florida, Southern Wesleyan University, and the National Association of Scholars, also serving on America 250 for the big birthday next year, America 250 Civics History, and America's Future Advisory. News in the realm of what is happening in higher ed over the past few days with these controversial Ivy League schools. Adam's book is Slacking, A Guide to Ivy League Miseducation. We'll remind you of that. Adam Kissel back on the program. Adam, it's Paul in Connecticut here. How are you?
Doing well. Thanks for having me back.
Yeah, and I wanted to have you back, talk to your people to get you back, because we've had some news here, Adam, since we chatted last time, news about Columbia and apparently some news and the pushback back and forth between the White House and Harvard continues over all that research money. It looks like, thankfully, Adam, Columbia, let's start there in New York, that it looks like after that library takeover, they're getting a little serious here. Are they or not?
Yes. So about 70 students have been suspended or expelled or even had their degrees revoked because of that library takeover. And that shows that Columbia is serious. The idea for Columbia was you have to show that you're serious even to start negotiations with the Trump administration. And I think Columbia is showing, whether they mean it or not, they're doing what they need to do to get their $1 billion back or $500 million back in research and other funding.
Yeah.
So it's a great start.
And that whole library situation, I guess, explain this, Adam Kissel. I guess it was around finals time, right? And that's where, if you're going to find students to disrupt, you generally do it in the big Ivy League libraries, right?
Right. So the idea, if you want to make a stink, is you camp out in the main quad, or if it's finals week, you want to go to where the students are and where you can get the press, and that's often going to be the library. That's also the strategy that some of the Harvard protesters and disruptors used at the Harvard Library. And then at Harvard, faculty members and students got suspended from library privileges because of that. So Harvard actually did the right thing when it came to their library.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
You know, I was going to say, knowing I was going to have you on, Adam, I was talking to my listeners yesterday, and I just find it odd. Now, look, if you and I met for a business lunch or dinner, we went out with our significant others or whatever, and we go to a restaurant, right, and we pick a restaurant, we don't go in there and tell the restaurant owners how to run their business. We made a choice to go there And I would think to respect the way they're doing what they're doing, and I understand the right to free expression, the right to protest, but I think you and I can agree here, and we talked about this last time, a lot of what we saw, I think, Adam, went beyond just regular, constructive, legitimate protest here.
Of course, right? So if you are harassing other students, creating basically a wall that you don't let Jewish students through, if you are disrupting, if you are committing vandalism, if you're committing violence, none of those things are legitimate protest, right? Holding a sign and advocating for your position is one thing, mm-hmm. but violence is another. So we have kind of professional graduate students at places like Columbia. They could be a 12th year graduate student.
12th year.
Right? They're not there to study. They're there to make trouble and have an anchor in the United States.
And let's talk about the Harvard situation. And again, the guest is Adam Kissel, one of the authors of Slacking, A Guide to Ivy League Miseducation. So I guess we had some legal arguments in this a few days ago or this week, Adam, where I guess the Trump White House and Harvard are still having this legal push over a lot of money, right?
Yeah, so in the case of Harvard, we're talking more like $2 billion, which even for a place with 55 or something billion dollars endowment, losing $2 billion is a lot of money. Mm-hmm. And what the government is saying is if you have pervasive anti-Semitism and discrimination violating civil rights, you don't deserve any of that money, not only as a civil rights matter, but also as a public policy matter. And Harvard is saying, well, you know, we did do this 300-page report proving that we're bad, but don't hold that against us. And you guys are going too far anyway. You just don't like our ideology, and we're making a First Amendment claim. Well, the judge seems to be going along with, yeah, maybe the government went too far. But Alan Dershowitz, the famous attorney, said, well, what's probably going to happen is Harvard wins down at the district court level. Mm-hmm. But at the Supreme Court, the government's probably going to win.
And the president of Harvard, whose name escapes me, sorry at the moment, Adam, but even he came out, and a gentleman who is Jewish, and he came out, did he not, and say, well, yeah, we have an anti-Semitism problem here. The guy's Jewish. Well, you're the boss. Fix it, right? Am I not reading this properly, Adam? Am I crazy or not?
He's kind of in a tough place, and you're right. So Alan Garber knows there's a problem. You know, step one is admitting that you have a problem.
Yeah.
He's done that. His faculty, though, mostly haven't. Now, there is a nice Bloomberg article showing a bunch of the faculty actually say it's time to settle. So he has people telling him to settle, but he has other people telling him to fight. And he's stuck in between. And he knows there's a problem, but everybody's also watching him because they know their university may be next.
And is this is he battling what, the American Association of University Professors? How is there an AAUP connection to all this or not?
There could be. You know, they basically became a union shop several years ago, so they kind of put themselves out of the game as a serious player. But the Faculty of Arts and Sciences, the Divinity School, these are very far left faculty who don't understand why their biased activism is a problem. They think that's what they're supposed to do. So it's those arts and sciences faculty who are giving him the hardest time, maybe some law professors. And he's stuck between them and, say, the scientists and medical researchers who say, I'm just trying to cure cancer over here. Can you guys please just let me get my money?
Yeah. Yeah. And I think to those people you mentioned, Adam, a lot of people, and it's sad because the idiots, and that's me saying that, not you, I don't want to put you on that, but, you know, the dopes, the idiots there who are causing the problems are spoiling it for the people at Harvard Medical School and Columbia Med and all these other schools who are like, exactly, hey, I'm just doing cancer cultures here, like, don't affect me. So I understand where there might be some internal pushing and shoving here.
It's an interesting situation. So, you know, Congress is in charge of how much money goes out for medical research and other scientific research. That money is going to happen one way or another, and the best professors are still going to get the money. Why not just go to Vanderbilt, where you don't have these problems, do your cancer research down there?
Yeah, in fact, I was going to ask you finally, Adam Kissel, are we pretty much down now to just Harvard and Columbia? I know there was, I mean, UPenn was a problem for a while. Or are there, how many other major schools? Is this still a big problem? Or are some of these schools outside of the Ivy League, are they coming around now? What's the deal with that? Do we know?
Well, Cornell is still under investigation. They're probably the biggest name that hasn't capitulated yet or really negotiated it out. News came out today. Second-tier George Mason University now has four different civil rights investigations against them. Don't know why that president's still in office. Northwestern is still under investigation, you know, close to the elite. And, you know, there's more civil rights investigations open, seems like, almost every day. So if you think your number is not going to come up, you think you're hiding out at, like, UConn, your number will come up.
Slacking, a guide to Ivy League miseducation. One of the authors, Adam Kissel. Adam, good to chat with you. I'm sure we'll chat down the road. Thank you, sir.
Thanks, Paul. Take care.
Appreciate it.